Support for KQED Podcasts comes from Star One Credit Union, now offering real-time money movement with Instant Pay. Make transfers and payments instantly between financial institutions. Online or through Star One's mobile app. Star One Credit Union, in your best interest.
From KQED.
Well, if we wanted to, I would totally be down to just throw out everything and talk about Kate Middleton for 20 minutes.
This is Political Breakdown from KQED in San Francisco. I'm Scott Schaefer. Well, today on The Breakdown, it's our weekly politics roundtable. We'll get an update on what's happening in the world of San Francisco politics. And let me tell you, there is a lot to catch up on. The March primary signaled a bit of a shift toward the middle of the political spectrum, at least by San Francisco standards. Voters approved one measure to require drug screening for people getting public assistance and another to take power away from the liberal-leaning police commission while giving more latitude and authority to the mayor and the SFPD. We'll get the backstory on how Mayor London Breed tried to pressure someone she appointed to the police commission to back her choice to head the SFPD's oversight body, how the passage of Breed's Prop E will likely undermine citizen oversight of the cops, and what it all says about the looming mayor's race in San Francisco, where Breed is facing a growing field of challengers. My KQED All-Star Politics team colleagues Marisa Lagos and Joe Fitzgerald Rodriguez are here with me. Happy Friday. Welcome, guys.
Happy Friday.
Yeah, happy Friday.
Well, a lot has been said and written about the March primary, what exactly the results say about the political direction San Francisco is heading in. So let's begin with the mayor. Joe, you know, you delve into San Francisco politics a lot. Where do you think this election leaves Mayor London Breed as she's facing, you know, a field of challengers come November?
Sure. You know, she had a bevy of propositions on the ballot that were hers, authored by her, touting her criminal justice bona fides, propositions E and F around policing and drug screening. But, you know, I don't think a lot of people got into the ballot box and said, you know, I really want to vote for Mayor London Breed's measures. I love that London Breed. Instead, what she can do now is take those measures and brag about them all the way to November.
Is she going to brag, though, Marisa? I mean, there's, you know, obviously voters did approve them, especially the drug testing by quite a big margin. But, you know, whether that'll make a difference, and there's going to be a different turnout in November also that may be less, you know, positively disposed toward those kinds of things.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to look at these ballot measures in concert with a bigger push we've seen from the mayor over the past few years. This includes, you know, adding more police and accepting state help in the Tenderloin, supporting, you know, maybe not explicitly supporting the recall of Chesa Boudin, but supporting the person who replaced him as district attorney and her sort of harder push against, you know, going after drug dealers and other folks. And if you look at who's running so far, I know Aaron Peskin might jump into this race, but all of the candidates who have announced so far are in a lot of ways, or I guess maybe with the exception of Asha Safai, we can get into that, but are really running from her right, on a very pro-police kind of platform. And so I think this is part of her, what her team sees as a way to push back on that.
Yeah, even Daniel Lurie, who, you know, is a philanthropist, kind of a do-gooder sort of public facing guy with his nonprofit, Joe, even he endorsed, you know, some of these things that were on the ballot and talks about, you know, ankle monitors for drug dealers and that kind of thing. So even somebody coming from perhaps a progressive point of view is, you know, kind of reading the room and where voters are on this stuff.
Well, sure, but it was also a strategic move too, right? You know, Daniel Lurie, as you alluded to, raised his own money in his own campaign for Proposition E, and part of that might take the shine a little bit away from Breed being able to, you know, tout her success in passing it before voters.
Yeah. You know, we've seen, Marisa, obviously Macy's is leaving. Nordstrom is shutting down, has shut down. Williams-Sonoma also in Union Square. How much of the problems that downtown is facing do you think are really London Breed's fault?
I mean, I would say in broad brush strokes, most of the challenges the city is facing are not any one person's fault. And a lot of them, if not the fault of, but have been severely exacerbated by the pandemic. I mean, the New York Times had a story this week about doom loops in urban centers around the nation, and it was so happy to see it wasn't just us being picked on, right? Because this is a problem. People aren't returning to the office. Commercial real estate has bottomed out across the nation. And so I think that there's a lot of things that a mayor gets blamed for that are never fair. On the other hand, She's been in that seat for several years, and she has appointed this police chief, appointed the majority of the police commission. She has her own DA who she's handpicked. I mean, the list goes on. Like, at a certain point, the buck does stop with you. And I think that there are, you know, some valid complaints at City Hall about the lack of leadership or sort of engagement from the mayor, or maybe in other cases, micromanaging things that obviously do sort of, you know, lay at the footsteps of Lyndon Breed.
Well, and Joe, you've done some reporting in the past week about the San Francisco Police Commission. One of her appointees, Max Carter Oberstone, had talked to you about how he was pressured from behind the scenes to vote for the mayor's choice to be president of the police commission. Let's hear a little bit about what he had to say.
You know, one very senior staffer would express to me very bluntly, you are the mayor's appointee. You do what the mayor says. You work at the pleasure of the mayor. He even cut me off one time and told me, you don't have any power. Like, you do what the mayor says.
And Joe, I think that particular cut maybe was alluding to another policy, these pretextual police stops, which disadvantage and disproportionately affect brown and black drivers, right?
Right. And just to back up a little, so Max Carter Oberstone, like you said, is Mayor Lyndon Breed's appointee to the police commission. Four of the members are appointed by the mayor. Three are appointed by the board of supervisors. In the city charter, they're supposed to be independent. This is supposed to be citizen oversight of cops. This is supposed to be the people's way of ensuring that police are staying on the side of good and they're not causing harm. But on paper, that's how it was supposed to work. In politics, we know that's not always how it works.
Exactly.
Right?
I mean, you know, Dianne Feinstein was sort of famous for really keeping her appointees on commissions, Marisa, on a very tight leash. I mean, all mayors, you know, you put someone into these positions. Yes, it's oversight. Yes, they're supposed to be independent. But, you know, any mayor is only going to be unhappy if they're doing things that are counter to what you'd like to see.
Right. But Max tells Joe that he was very open about one of the main policies that he wanted to get instituted, which was this ban on pretextual stops. And we can get into that a little bit. But again, I think that this speaks to, sure, we can talk about whether she's acting appropriately to try to exercise that control. But at the end of the day, like, isn't that a managerial fault that you chose somebody who you didn't see eye to eye with, or that you didn't have a good enough sense of what they wanted to do on the commission or listen to them when they said it? Like, I think that at a certain point, good managers, good executives are picking people who are going to sort of forward their vision, and they shouldn't have to micromanage that.
Well, and this is something that Carter Oberstone tells me he was really upfront about from the beginning. He sits in front of Mayor Breed, he sits in front of her staffers, and she grills him before giving him the job. And he says, look, the only reason I'm getting on this commission is it's a volunteer gig, essentially. You get like $100 honorarium a month, is I want to pass this ban on when cops can pull people over for little things like ticky-tacky things like your license plate being out of order, whatever, what have you, when they guess that you might be a criminal, maybe. And that has led to a lot of racist outcomes, and he wants to stop it.
Yeah, well, and, you know, things have evolved. I mean, if you think back to the beginning of the pandemic and, you know, in May of 2020 and the murder of George Floyd, and Lyndon Breed was out there talking about redirecting police department funds to community things. So she was, you know, not necessarily her own position on these things, Marisa, has shifted a bit, too.
Well, I think in general, I mean, this is part of a larger push that goes well beyond the boundaries of San Francisco, where we've seen a little bit of a backlash against some of the reforms. And let's be clear, most of these were put in place exactly because there were problems with the way policing was happening. And I do think folks like Breed are kind of between a rock and a hard place at this moment.
Yeah. And Joe, real quick.
Yeah, sure. And like, as you say, now that has led Mayor Breed, as Marisa was alluding to, didn't really have the ability to, or at least didn't try to negotiate. Now she had Proposition E to wrest control of the commission away.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. And when we return, we'll continue talking about Prop E. You're listening to Political Breakdown. I'm Scott Schaefer. We'll be right back.
Support for this podcast comes from San Francisco International Airport. Some want it all. SFO wants zero. Zero landfill waste, net carbon, and net energy by 2030. Learn more about the triple zero goal at flysfo.com.
And welcome back to Political Breakdown. Scott Schaefer here with my KQED Politics team colleagues, Joe Fitzgerald Rodriguez and Marisa Lagos. Before the break, folks, we just had started talking about Proposition E, which the mayor put on the ballot. And that does a lot of things. It really reduces the requirement for police to write up use of force and what happened and rely more on their body cam footage, to install surveillance cameras without oversight, to initiate car chases when they suspect somebody has committed a certain type of misdemeanor, not just a felony, all kinds of things. And Marisa, in a lot of ways, what this does is it really removes the oversight, or really limits the oversight of the police commission, and gives the cops a lot more power.
Yeah, I mean, it really does tie their hands, and I think sort of undercut the purpose that the commission was created with. And again, like, I do think that, you know, you can talk about whether the commission has gone too far or been too deliberative, but it is fascinating to me. I mean, the thing that really struck me, and that I sort of started asking around about when I read Prop E and then looked at some of the reporting that had been done on it, was like, who wrote this and why? And it really does seem like it was a grab bag of things that polled well. It was not about a deep sit down with criminal justice experts and people on sort of all sides of the system to say, what, how can we get to these really deep problems that we're seeing around property crimes and other things and still keep our community safe. It was like, hey, this looks good on paper. It polls well. And clearly, I mean, the public was willing to accept it. I think the question now is, like, can it be implemented in a way that actually forwards both the goals of the people who wrote it and the city at large when we talk about things like car chases and the threats that they can pose to public safety themselves?
And Marisa, you touched on this earlier, but really to expand on it, I mean, what's really fascinating about this is this comes out of the disagreements that Breed had with Carter Oberstone on the pretext stop policy. She wanted to amend it in certain ways, weaken it in certain ways, and oppose it behind the scenes without really opposing it outwardly. And instead of negotiating or pushing pressure points or anything like that, she decided to pass this proposition instead. That's really counter to past mayors. Like Mayor Lee, you may remember, Scott, like, you know, Mayor Lee or Willie Brown, they all had ways of negotiating with their...
And pressuring. Certainly Willie Brown did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting, too, because we have a mayor who's Black, a police chief, a district attorney, they're all Black, and yet they seem to be supporting these policies, which in many ways, Marisa, and this is part of the reason they've been restricted, have disadvantaged Brown and Black folks. And certainly things like facial recognition, you know, is just one example.
Yeah, it is. I think, though, this also speaks to, again, another broader tension we're seeing within this debate over public safety, which is often the communities that are both most affected by incarceration and the historic criminal justice system, but also by crime, are communities of color, are, you know, impoverished communities that unfortunately are largely communities of color. And so I do think that there's a sense sometimes among folks like London Breed and maybe Bill Scott that there's sort of white liberals out here saying what is the ideal, who are not living in a situation where, you know, they have gunshots in their neighborhood all the time, where they really do are, you know, their kids are walking through the Tenderloin. And so I think sometimes this is not the first time we've seen this, where largely progressive politicians of color are more willing to kind of go a little further. I mean, look at New York City and the mayor there.
Yeah, former Republican, former cop. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, also, I think there's sometimes a misconception about what communities of color want when it comes to policing. I mean, often that they are, to your point, Marisa, oftentimes disproportionately the victims of crime and violence, you know, in their own communities. And so, you know.
But I've also done all that reporting on victims of color, largely women. And, you know, I think there's also, I think in general, we just need to listen to these communities more, because sometimes they want us to go further and sometimes they're not happy with what justice looks like, quote unquote.
Exactly.
Right. No community is a monolith. There's going to be diversity of opinion in all of them.
Yeah. So we talked a bit about the mayor's race earlier. One of the people running is Mark Farrell, who was a supervisor, also interim mayor, actually. Complicated story, but London Breed took over when Ed Lee died, and then Mark Farrell got put in for that job by the Board of Supes. He says if he's elected mayor in November, he's going to fire the police chief, Bill Scott. And Joe, you talked to the president of the Police Officers Association, the union representing the cops, Tracy McCray. Let's hear what she had to say.
I think Farrell said, oh, day one, if he wins, you know, he's going to fire Chief Scott. And I was just kind of like, I mean, okay, I go, but the process to get a new chief in hasn't changed. So, like, yeah, you can go ahead and do that, but who do you got lined up to come in? Is that person going to be on the list of candidates from the police commission? Because they control that.
interesting, given all the discussion we just had about the police commission and de-emphasizing them. But, you know, I think it's you can see why Farrell would say, I want to fire the chief. I mean, you know, often mayors, new mayors, want their own police chief. You know, I think it's not unusual. I mean, obviously, it's a very political decision to launch that right in the middle or at the beginning of his candidacy, Joe. But, you know, it's not kind of unprecedented either.
It's not unprecedented. And in fact, it's not even a departure from what Breed wants.
Right.
Because one of the things Carter Oberstone mentions in that interview that we just heard is that one of the reasons she put him on there was she also wanted commissioners who would help her find a replacement to the police chief, which implies that she also wanted Chief Scott.
I've heard that basically that she had long wanted to replace him, but didn't feel that she had the votes on the commission to get in a candidate she wants. I also think there's a little bit of a cautionary tale playing out right across the bay here with the Oakland Police Department, which has been without a chief for, what, a year now? And it's not to say that, you know, the issues there between the mayor and the police commission are going to exist here. I don't know. But I do think from what we've heard on some of the lists that the commission has put forward, it's kind of like a repeat of similar candidates. And I do wonder if there's a recruiting challenge right now. Like, if you're a police officer, a chief in another city with a decent job, do you want to come here if you're watching this all from the outside?
Yes. Although they might be encouraged by the passage of Prop E, too. They have, you know, they'll have a little less interference from the commission. But like, you know, to your point, you still got to get approval from the commission. So it's kind of tricky. I want to ask about another ballot measure that passed, Joe, Prop D, that was put on the ballot by the Ethics Commission. Voters approved that with 89% of the vote. And it was triggered by that scandal, the investigation into not just DPW Chief Mohamed Nuru, but Department of Building Inspections and Harlan Kelly, the head of the PUC. And it's kind of relevant because next week you're going to be covering something very much related to that.
Yeah. Next week, Harlan Kelly, former head of the PUC, is going to face sentencing in federal court. You know, he's already been found guilty of taking bribes. We also covered the person who bribed him getting found guilty as well. That would be Walter Wong. But, you know, Proposition D really is a response, like you said, to this scandal. One of the things that it changes is an exemption in the law for gifts from romantic partners or former romantic partners. And that comes into play again with Mayor Breed.
Yeah.
No, as you recall, having her car repaired by former Public Works Director Mohamed Nuru.
Yeah, and maybe even more important, I think, is some of the restraints on some of these charities that are set up to support the police department or the rec park department, which we've seen in this investigation and even before that they can be misused in ways that, you know, perhaps are less than on the up and up.
I investigated in a former job Mohamed Nuru's use of funding from a baseball charity for public works parties. This is money funneled from construction contractors he oversaw and had control over millions of dollars for, and funneling that money through a baseball charity to lavish parties for his staffers. And the government said, you know, that constituted a bribe.
Yeah. All right, guys. Thanks so much for being here. Joe Fitzgerald Rodriguez and Marisa Lagos. As always, great to see you. All right. That is a wrap for Friday, March 15th. Political Breakdown is a production of KQED. Our engineer is Jim Bennett. Our producer is Izzy Bloom. Our team includes Marisa Lagos, Guy Marzorati, Molly Solomon, Otis R. Taylor Jr., and Ethan Tobin Lindsay. I'm Scott Schaefer. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great weekend.